Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and we've taken a minute to have a couple of drinks of coffee, imbibe some nicotine, and we're back with a fishing report. No ranting involved. Yes. All right. Quiet, Frank. Yes, we know you play guitar. Okay. All right. See, I'm even ranting on myself. So, let's start over in PGI. We were talking about black drum, white black drum over there in PGI. What else is in the PGI canals?
A lot of little juvenile tarpon moving around. They're done with the dredging in there, so you should start to see an increase in, you know, or not necessarily an increase, but at least a little bit more consistency over there at Ponce and up in the Rim Canal and stuff.
I would say an increase in consistency in Ponce and up and through there, because that's exposed a whole new bottom, and so now everything's going to be trying to find new places to hide, and the critters that get in there aren't, you know, don't have homes built. So.
Right.
No, I'll say you got a little bit of both.
There you go.
Consistency and more fish. Looking forward to that in Ponce de Leon and PGI Canals. What else is going on?
That's about it in PGI. I mean, it's just kind of a hodgepodge. It's just slowly starting to build a little bit more momentum now that that's all done. So I think every day you're going to see more sheep's head, mangrove snapper. You may even see a few more snook start to show up on the lights because they've been virtually invisible this whole winter time. Relatively speaking, compared to most winters.
Well, we've seen a lot of big snook caught, though.
But
I'm going to say you're right that on a night charter, Kale, Carl, some of the other guys, Brian and some of them have done trips back there, and they've caught a few snook and a lot of redfish. So, you know, it stands to reason when you were talking about the mouths of the canals.
Yeah.
As this water warms up, the fish will start leaving the canals any day, any week now. They're going to start pushing out of the canals, moving back to the flats where it's going to be a little different water for them.
Yeah, if it were me going in there, I mean, I would literally be fishing like Pass Inlet, Colony Point, and Ponce, and only be fishing like Ponce would be the only exception. Ponce, I'd actually be going up inside and fishing along the Rim Canal and those mouths of each one of those canals that are going along it.
Yeah.
But Colony Point, I'd only be fishing probably up around the second corner.
Yeah.
And then Bass Inlet, I'd only be fishing that first, you know, eighth of a mile.
Well, swinging down just south the ponds down by the barge canal, I haven't heard too much, but around the corner in Alligator Creek, Dad and I were out Monday. I was talking to Vinny on the phone, and they hooked a 32-inch cobia right in the mouth of Alligator Creek.
Nice.
And they were sitting there, and I haven't talked to them again since, but they what looked like a big shark on the flat.
Yeah,
he said he was thinking dolphin, he was thinking shark. He said he couldn't tell what it was, but it was big and it was pushing water in the flats. And
that's
he hadn't
the second
seen
one
it.
I've heard of them.
He hadn't seen
call
it.
Yes.
So
yesterday or day before yesterday morning, a person was going over the 41 bridge heading southbound, and they saw a pretty good sized shark cruising across the flat right there on that sandbar, fin and tail sticking out of the water.
Yeah.
You know, so they were pretty convinced it was for sure a shark, because, I mean, you know, shark's tail goes straight up and down versus a dolphin's is horizontal.
Well, you don't see the dolphin's tail out with the, you know, the way they've, when they swim, you don't see the dolphin's tail. You
yeah.
can see the fin, but you won't see the tail. You only see that on the shark.
Exactly.
So, but Alligator Creek, we got some little bit of trout in there, a few jacks, a couple of pompano. All in all, not bad. I wouldn't say exciting fishing, but pretty good.
Well, to come up and with a new name for pompano and permit, like pump it or something.
Yeah, pump it.
Something.
Yeah.
Everyone gets them confused all the time.
Yeah.
So it's one or the other.
Permano.
Yeah.
We've got permano in there. So as you go south along the flats down there on the east side, we got redfish around the islands, and there is a bunch of them. Went with Dad, and we took that little boat, went all the way around a couple of the islands, experimenting, finding where some holes were, looking for new places to fish. Because one of the things people don't want to do is find a place to fish. They want to go fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And we had caught, Dad caught a trout, and caught a redfish, we caught a few puffers and, you know, stuff. We had a really nice day. But the really exciting part is when I go back there the next time, I've got two spots to fish. Because I was standing on the nose of the boat while Dad idled around the island, staying about, you know, 10 feet off the island at a very slow idle. And we came around one corner, and I had no idea. Wide open, the farthest island out, and never see anybody fishing there. And I get it, but the fish were on kind of the southeast corner of it, you know, towards the back, but on the side. And the water didn't look like it was any deeper. So I took the stick-it pin, which I'm going to mark with depths on it. I'm going to put black lines on my stick-it.
Like that.
So that when I'm using it to find out why the fish were there, because we came up, and all of a sudden, see these big bursts of clouds of mud just blowing off everywhere. Then see the redfish, and it was literally amazing how many fish we spooked off that corner. And I had Dad back up, and I took the stick-it and started moving the stick-it pin around, looking for, you know, what's up with the bottom.
Any subtleties or anything?
The grass was hiding a hole.
Really?
It all looked like it was about the same depth, but the grass was taller in that hole, so it only came up to the height of the grass surrounding it. And on one side,
it was all the lawnmowers keep it evil.
Yeah. Even. So here you got probably 14, 18 inches of water. And then you had about 2 to 2.5 feet.
Wow.
And then going out to between, you know, 18, 20 inches on the outside. And they were all laid up in there. And there was at least a couple dozen. Now, the cool part for me is I know exactly where to anchor the next time. And we found another hole. And the one thing, the first one was easy because it's wide open. You just pull up, get the wind to your back, stay a good cast away from it, and you pitch your baits in there. Second one was between two islands and around the backside, so I had to find a way in because I hadn't come around those islands before. So I went out and we scouted the hole, and I did the whole thing with the stick-it pin, but then I went outside of the island and found my way in. And we had to crisscross around there to figure out, because it's going to be better on a low tide. It's a hole, and the holes are always better on low tides. And I found the trough coming in from around the other island, so now I know how to get into it, where I can anchor up without having to go through the hole. Because I got there by actually driving through between two islands that actually had a hole in it, and that's not going to be a good idea for getting back there.
No.
So I got a route scouted in, know exactly where I'm going to put my boat and how to cast into it. Dad and I are going to have some really good days down there.
There you go.
And if you're just down here for a week, it's hard to do stuff like that. But if you're drifting along, you know, just drift across the flat and look for the different places where the fish are possible to be. And then, you know, remember where to come back, and that way you won't drift up on them again. You know, drift up and push them out. But unless you do this every single day and you're on the water every day, you can't see the fish when you're at high speed. You got to go as slow as possible. And I'm not on the water every day. I don't have the eyesight to see those fish when we're on plane.
Right.
So I do it at dead slow idle, and I can see the fish then. I mean, it's plain as the, you know, mustache on my over my beard. All right, but anyway, going back a little bit south towards Pirate Harbor, there's no trout in Pirate Harbor. Don't go in there, and don't even annoy yourself. There's no reason to go into the canals in Pirate Harbor right now, unless you want to catch some small mangrove snappers or something. That's about all that's left in there. They're gone.
Are they?
Yeah, there's nothing there. And it's, you know, it's a nice place to drive, and it's out of the wind, but there's a lot better places to fish.
Well, you can only have so many hundreds of boats going in there day in and day out and beat the crap out of it before they decide, okay, I've had enough of this.
Yeah, we caught one 14-inch trout. Yeah, one 14-inch trout, and, you know, that was with a slip sinker rig on the bottom, and so the bite is really slow for even the fish, the few fish that are left there.
Right.
But I just wouldn't annoy yourself. You know, it's a long ways to travel to get there from anywhere else, so I wouldn't. Head down to Two Pines. A lot of fish are on Two Pines right now. Be very careful. Remember, you got to go kind of past the bar and angle back in. A lot of trout back there, redfish, snook around the islands, lots of holes and cuts and pockets to fish, and you're going to have to experiment a little bit. It's not an easy place to fish your first time, but take a little bit of time to learn it, and you got amazing fishery right now.
Right. Well, and I also know, like, right now we got a lot of listeners from the PGI Fishing Club, and trout is their fish this month, and they've only got a couple days left. And trout have been super, super hard, but the last couple days, I've had a few better reports from down there around Two Pines, all the way across Boquilla and over towards Yuseppa.
I would go to
a couple guys that are catching them, though. Here's the difference: they're catching them on pinfish under a cork.
Now, I hooked a monster trout outside of Pirate Harbor on the sandbar, right in the dark grass. I mean, sitting in the boat and decided, okay, I took a bag of frozen shrimp and I mushed them up in my fingers. I mean, I crushed them up real good, tossed out the whole bag, and about 15 minutes after that, 20 minutes after that, shrimp under a popping cork. I just set the rod in the rod holder, picked up the phone, was talking to Vinny, and all of a sudden I looked over, my rod's bent double. There's this beautiful trout flying out of the water. And the only reason I know what it was, and it was in the high 20 inches. I mean, it was a good sized fish.
Right.
And all I saw was it come up out of the water, spit the hook, you know, kind of thumb its fin at me, and down in the water and gone. And that was the one fish. And it's just because I picked up the phone, set down the rod, picked up the phone. I would have got him if I would have, you know, actually been holding the rod.
What's your biggest trout you've ever caught?
29, I think, is the biggest trout I've ever caught. It's around 29.
That's impressive.
It was a nice fish.
That's real nice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, you know, like certain fish hit, like all fish hit a certain size, and then every inch or every foot, depending on the species, after that just gets so exponentially larger.
Well, they get,
and I've noticed
they grow in girth.
Yeah. I've noticed that with trout, like that difference between like a 24 inch and a 26 inch fish is huge.
Huge difference in tonnage.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing because, I mean, my personal biggest is like right at barely 24 inches, but I've seen 28.
Well, I used to do a lot of charters, and I actually had a job where I was superintendent for a construction company, and we did all work on the water, and I was paid to fish every day. He came on the boat and he says, you know, where's your fishing poles, the owner of the company? And I said, well, I work for you. I'm not, you know, I take my work seriously. You know, I'm getting paid to make sure everything runs smoothly. He says, you're better than that. He says, this is only going to take you a few minutes, make sure everything's done. And when I get on this boat, I expect you to be fishing poles and I expect you to know where the fish are. So, I mean,
nice.
I got paid a lot of money to, you know, keep these guys in line, make sure everything went where it's supposed to be, and keep everybody happy and find fish. And so I did a lot of fishing for a few years there. Yeah. I liked working for him. I would have never started my own company if he wouldn't have sold his, because I would have stayed working for him forever. I love my job.
That's
paid
awesome.
A ton of money and all my expenses, and just had a great time.
You got to see a lot of Florida.
Mm. It was wonderful. But speaking of a lot of Florida, going down towards Matt Lachey, hearing more and more reports of redfish north and south from the Indian Fields all the way down to Ding Darling. A lot
sheep's
more redfish
head.
Down there.
A lot of sheep's head scattered in there with them, too. And, you know, because of some. It's cool down there from, was that Two Pines all the way down through Matt Lachey and into the Indian Fields area. You get up along those mangrove shorelines and it's nothing like it is over here. Because those mangrove shorelines, you got 18 inches of water going up to it, and then you get to that drip edge and it drops off to 2 and 3 feet underneath those bushes. It's, some of those spots are really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing there.
I mean, it's so different. You know, I've only fished it a handful of times. You've taken me down there a couple times. Danny took me down there a couple times. And it's amazing to see those buckets that are down underneath those mangroves. And it's very, very small areas, but...
But you gotta really
cool.
know where to look for them.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta
there's
really
not a lot
know,
of them, but the ones that are there, it's like...
It's all about doing the Lewis and Clark.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're not exploring, you're not learning. And take part of your day... Just driving along, like if you go down towards Matt Lachey, don't try and figure out where to stop. Just let Poseidon tell you. All of a sudden, make a left turn or a right turn.
Right.
And go over there and fish. And
don't be a lemming and just follow other boats. Make up your own mind. Go other places and find that stuff all on your own, because there's so many little areas that are cool.
Let's say it's, you know, you get down there and you're just going past 2 points and it's 1 o'clock, and tell yourself at 1:06, no matter what, it hits 600 on your phone or your watch, and flip a coin and say whether you're going to go left or right.
Exactly.
That's as good a way to find fish as anything. I mean, because I can tell you where I found those redfish. I would have never looked for redfish there, ever. I would have never stopped, and I never had. It's been 30-some years of fishing the harbor, and I've never stopped there before. And I've driven by it at least, 400 times.
So, at least?
At least, what I mean? Hundreds of times.
1,000.
And never stopped to fish that island because it never looked like it had anything. And wasn't until I put that stick-it pin in the water and found that pocket and figured out why the fish were there. So anyway, as we go down, getting down around the mouth of the Coosahatchee, Sanibel, Ponderosa, what's going on in the flats down there?
Getting some mixed reports down there. There's been some bigger redfish off the ends of some of those docks there by the hotels there, on, what is that, right there by Pine Island Road?
Right.
Not Pine Island, Sanibel Causeway.
Sanibel Causeway, yeah.
All those docks there have had some bigger trout right at the ends of them with some redfish under them. Some sheep's head, oddball black drum, a few snook have kind of moved back into there again. And then the flats out just all around there, all from Ponderosa all the way over to any of the passes. There's some bonnet heads starting to move around, a few oddball sharp-nosed sharks, some bigger trout. They're very far and few between, but they are a little bit bigger. Mangrove snapper in some of those sand holes, and some sheep's head in some of those sand holes.
Now, if you're coming up along the intercoastal, hitting the passes, the next one up is redfish, then Captiva, and what's going on up there?
The passes have been doing real good, especially right along the edges of them. Pompano, big whiting. Not a lot of numbers of whiting, but I'm hearing of some pound and a quarter whiting.
Really?
Which is pretty chunky.
That's chunky for a whiting.
Yeah.
That's like getting a pound and a quarter yellow perch.
Exactly. Been a few oddball flounder. Once in a while, a bigger bull red has been being caught just by the offshot. Sheep's head. Few little sharks. A lot of little grouper in there. There have been some gags and some reds inside all those passes, but most of them are the undersized, but they're at least bending the rod. One guy had a whole bunch of nice blue runners that he was catching while just drifting through the pass. He was trying to catch whatever bottom bouncing for the pompano and flounder and whatever else, and kept catching some nice blue runners that were much larger than his hand. So, something just a little different.
One of the cool things is, did I tell you I now have the federal trademark? Radio Fishing and Fish and Frank.
That's awesome.
National Registered. I am the Fish and Frank. Yes,
you are.
Mm-hmm.
No mistaking that.
No, and I actually legally am now.
Nice.
So, anyway.
You have to legally change your name to that, too, because that way it saves an argument when people are like, well, what's your name? What do I need to announce you as? Fish and Frank. Well, yeah. No. I need you not.
I am. I'm going to change it to.
I am.
I'm going to leave my name alone, Frank. But just add fishing to the front of it.
Right.
And I'm going to have that on my driver's license. And I figure there's going to be nothing better than, I'm going to go speed. I'm going 20 miles an hour over the speed limit somewhere just so I can be stopped by a cop and go, all right, what's your name, boy? Fish and Frank. What's your name, boy? Fish and Frank.
Here it is.
I got to do something bad just so I can have fun with it.
There you go.
Yeah, I just don't want to pay the ticket. It'll probably be the only reason I don't do it.
Yeah, exactly. Just go get a regular Florida ID. Have them put it on there.
Mm.
That'd be fun to just pull it out. Here it is. Here's my legal ID. Here you go.
Right. So, anyway.
Going out all along those beaches, most of the heavier fishing is concentrated right there on those passes themselves. We're talking about a little bit mainly with the passes, but Boca Grande Pass, the sheep's head kind of moved back in on the phosphate dock a little bit more. Mangrove snapper are there, but they're real small. Same way with the jacks that have been moving in and out of there. And then if you want to just walk the beaches, I don't care if it's from Venice all the way down, it's still primarily the whiting, oddball pompano, some smaller flounder, lots of, you know, those bigger whiting have been doing pretty well. A few guys have been doing a little bit of shark fishing and picking up some oddball ones here and there from 4 foot to like 6 foot is about the biggest I've heard of. And it was a sand shark, so no telling what that is.
Right.
You know, there's no such thing as a sand shark, so people just call them that because they don't know any better. Because
it's kind of brown colored, so, yeah. You know, and sharks, like every other creature in the ocean or lakes or anywhere else, the color changes to match its surroundings.
Absolutely.
I mean, even though they're apex predator, stuff still wants to eat them. I mean, Goliath grouper will eat them, other sharks eat them. So, you know, and in order to sneak up on their prey and be a predator, they have to be sneaky as well. So,
absolutely.
You know, the color of a shark doesn't mean much. But yeah. If I was going out at deep water in the Gulf, now walking along the beach, as you said, you know, the whiting, you got a couple of sharks here and there. I'm really not going to expect much for shark fishing. We always have some. There's always sharks here. There is never a time when there's no sharks here. But I think we're going to have 95% more sharks by the end of this month. I would say halfway through April.
Yeah. Usually
by the time April 15th hits, you know, by March 15th. If it used to be April 15th, but now I'm going to call March 15th because the weather's changed. We're a month ahead of wherever we were before. It's colder earlier. It's warmer earlier. But by the middle of March, we'll have a bunch of sharks to fish for. If you're coming down to Florida to shark fish right now, you're not going to have the best of experiences.
No.
I mean, you might get lucky. And right now, way better to be lucky than good.
In a heartbeat.
And
still better than the snow.
Yeah, if you're going, I'd rather be sitting on a boat waiting for a shark bite than
ice fishing waiting for a perch bite.
Yeah. Oh, wait, much more so. Unless I got a shack, you know, some peppermint schnapps and a little, what is it, white rum with peppermint schnapps. I think that's the drink, the mix of the two with. So, anyway, never mind, I wouldn't do that. Clean cut. And but out in the Gulf, about 23 miles out, red grouper, Spanish sardines, just regular dead old sardines. Best way to get them, drift until you hit them, then throw a buoy. As soon as you hook up, throw a buoy, come and drift back that buoy. If you hook up again, anchor up and fish. But where you're fishing them, I would be heading out. You got to look for some kind of hard bottom. And
doesn't have to necessarily be an artificial reef. Just look for the hard bottom.
When you're going along, you're going over sand bottom with your depth finder, the line on the bottom is kind of wavy, and that is the waves. But the line itself at the bottom is usually fairly distinct. And as soon as you see the line on the bottom kind of looking more like you'd picture a very close sound wave, like I'm looking at the sound waves on our, you know, the computer here, and it's just very jagged line, and that's what you're looking for on your bottom machine to tell that hard bottom, is if the line is relatively smooth, you know, don't have your depth finder in real high power, and you'll see a smooth line, and then as soon as you hit that hard bottom, it will start going very squiggly, like if you were to see the seismograph when the earthquakes hit, you know, that type of look to the line. That's when you hit that hard bottom. So, and then just turn the boat off and throw the baits out and drift. That's the best way to do it.
And most of those guys that are doing for the grouper are doing better as they go north out of Boca. You know, from Venice, between Boca and actually almost to Sarasota, fishing has been off the chain closer.
Right.
You know, if you're going straight out of Boca or south of Boca, you're having to travel a minimum of 25 to 35 to really get into good, consistent fish.
I think if you go back 10,000 years, back to when the ice was melting and, you know, the ice age and all that, the Peace River went out, is always flowed out. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had the Peace River, the Closatchie River, Lake Okeechobee, all these things. And forever, they've dumped sand out into the Gulf.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why to the north of us or more to the extreme south of us, the bottom doesn't have as much sand cover on it.
Right.
I think so much over time as eroded out and just went out through the passes that it covers our bottom right off of Port Charlotte more so than it does north or south.
Well, our natural flow is to the south with our currents anyway. So with all the silt, sediment, and sand, just like you said, coming out of especially the Peace River and the Caloosahatchee, it dumps that out. You know, once you get from Charlotte Harbor south, it stays relatively shallow and stays that way until, like, Naples for some reason has a little dog leg that comes in and makes it a little deeper, a little bit quicker, but not much.
No.
You know, and but from Little Gasparilla Pass north, you have no real major tributaries feeding out of there. You got a lot of small passes, but there's no major rivers that are dumping it out. No. You know, not until you get up to what, Bradenton? Like, what's that, Manatee River?
Yeah, the Manatee River.
Manatee River is basically the next biggest one, and what's that, 100 miles away?
Yeah, and it doesn't have the flow of the Peace River. It's not as long.
No.
And we got the Peace, the Mayaca, and the Caloosahatchee all been dumping stuff.
Plus, that's wider.
So, yeah, wider.
It's wider. You know, ours funnels down a little bit, so it's that little bottleneck. You know, it's kind of like putting your finger over the hose.
Right. So, what else is going on with the fishing out there? Haven't heard much about king mackerel.
Nope, but mangrove snapper, sheep's head, porgies, grunts. So those are all doing good from that 6 to 15 mile mark. About 12 miles seems to be the best.
Yeah, we're a little short of good king mackerel temperatures. We need another 3 or 4 degrees of water before we're really going to start seeing much of the trolling fish. But
they're starting to pick up some cobia out there, though.
Cobia's getting a little better.
Some mixed reports all over the place, inshore and offshore.
In the harbor, Danny Latham, the most amazing thing. I mean, Danny's an amazing fisherman anyway. Just nobody quite like him. And to get three cobia on, C3 cobia, back up, have three of your customers cast in. They were using freeline shrimp, and they hooked all three cobia.
Mm-hmm.
And three guys, three cobia on at the same time, a triple in cobia, that has to be inside some kind of record. I mean,
that's pretty amazing.
That's
a Chinese fire drill big time, too. I mean,
it's exactly what I said. It's just, man, talk about politically incorrect, but that just sums it up. I mean, you know, Doc, you know, here comes the line. Okay, get over him. Okay, you on the, you know.
Yeah.
You know, stand up, kneel down. Go. I mean, gosh, what a trip that would be.
That'd be fun.
Yeah,
it's exciting, frustrating, and just a blast all at the same time. It's good stuff.
Just chaotic. That had to be amazing. But anyway, so the cobia, let's go up around Lemon Bay. I know there's some trout up there, but not tremendous amounts either.
Not tremendous amounts. It's been really weird up there this last week. I have not heard any super consistent reports up there in Lemon Bay. The ones that I'm hearing about are a few trout here and there, a few redfish here and there. The redfish I am hearing about are literally at the mouths of some of those canals that go up into the Inglewood area and underneath any of the docks that are right on the intercoastal. I'm not hearing of the guys catching a few in the sand holes like normal. It's sporadic. And maybe they're doing okay up there. It's just the lack of information that I've gotten this past week from it.
And coming down the intercoastal, I don't know anything you can really kind of target along that area of the intercoastal. You get down to Placida, fishing does get a little better. You've got Gasparilla Pass right there, and a lot of water coming in and out.
Yeah.
So
been some good redfish on those docks on the north end of Boca Grande, right there on that south side of Gasparilla Pass.
Yeah,
some the decent reds, some mangrove snapper, few sheep's head, and actually I heard of a guy, he got four flounder that were nice size. It was the only, you know, he hadn't caught a flounder there in months, but he got four of them in one little trip.
Cool.
So sporadic. And then around the Placida Trestle itself, sheep's head did pick up a lot last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I heard from quite a few people. Monday, a guy was out there, and he said they were catching a few. They were seeing a lot, but they weren't chewing very well. You know, a couple of guys were having the lucky horseshoe where they were catching them, but not a lot of guys catching them, just seeing a bunch. A lot of short mangrove snapper. Some okay whiting, few trout, oddball bonnethead. Kind of a mixed bag out there. I mean, if I'm going to go fishing, it's going to be definitely the Placida, Boca Grande area if I'm stuck fishing from shore. You know, which I honestly really enjoy shore fishing a lot. You know, I can move around and play around and just check out other things, and it gives me time to want to experiment.
Well, one of the reasons why they, you know, make boats, and it's not mandatory you own one.
No.
Almost wish it wasn't. You know, I'm getting ready to sell off a whole bunch of mine. The let's see. From there, let's look at the tailing flats going, Catfish Creek up to Widden Creek, backside of Bull Bay.
That whole area from Catfish Creek all the way basically to the top side of Bull Bay, you know, all those flats there are holding some trout. Very inconsistent on the sizes. So they're sporadically scattered everywhere from the clam fields up to Catfish. If you fish along the edges of all the shoreline there, right at the mouth of Catfish and Widden, even some of those deeper sand holes and the one trough that goes from, what is that, the White Pelican Island going into Widden Creek.
Speaking of White Pelicans, there's a whole bunch of them down by Powered Harbor.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of White Pelicans down there. I was really surprised. I'm used to seeing them out by, sandfly, devilfish, all right through there, all the way over to Placida Trestle. But to see them all the way up inside, north to Pirate Harbor, I was actually really surprised at how many White Pelicans were up there. And I know if you're sitting up north and you're wondering about it, but it's a normal brown pelican is about...
The White Pelicans are from up north, so a lot of people up there are familiar with them and not familiar with the brown pelicans.
But the brown pelican's much smaller.
Oh, yeah. Probably 40% smaller, easily.
That's what I was thinking, because the white pelicans are big.
They're giant.
And
Christy actually got to see them a couple weeks ago. We got a bagel and went over and sat at Bayshore, and we're watching.
Yeah.
We would go over there every now and then and eat breakfast, and there was a group of them out there in front of Bayshore. It was about 3 weeks ago. I thought I told you about that.
Wow.
There was, but not a lot of them, which was weird, because usually you see, like,
the ones that are down in Pirate Harbor are not a bunch of them. I mean, there's quite a few for being there, but I would say maybe a dozen. Then I saw another island that probably had six of them on it.
Yeah, this group was about six.
It's probably that group from down there. Another island had about six. The other island had a dozen. Then there was some mixed cormorants and herrings and pelicans all in the same, island. But
cool part about those white pelicans is that they're pack hunters.
Really?
They don't dive. They actually swim in groups, and you'll watch them, and they kind of start to make like a half circle shape, and they actually funnel the fish and spook up fish, and all they do is dip and scoop and grab that way. They don't dive down on them the way the brown pelicans do.
Explains their size.
Yeah, but it's
much more efficient feeding pattern, and without diving, they wouldn't lose their eyesight.
Right.
So they could get to be a much older, larger bird.
Yeah.
Brown pelicans don't live that long. Yeah. Coming back up inside, Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, both are good to go to right now. You've got some trout out through the middle, a little bit of ladyfish.
A lot of snook.
A lot of snook.
A lot of guys seeing snook there lately. Ever since that cold front, I don't know if it pushed them out of some of those creeks or what, but a lot of guys this last couple days seeing them in those deeper holes and the deeper troughs in there, scattered. They're not bunched up. There's a few fish that are bunched up, but they're seeing one here, two there, four here, and decent sized fish.
Now Rhett came up with the only thing he's having any success on with catching snook, and he's doing a pretty good job of it on artificials, was the white marsh minnow with a 16th ounce jig head. I believe it was red. And what he is throwing it out, and with that very light head, it doesn't sink, so you can reel it very, very slowly and just get that tail going. So the marshmallow is a paddle tail shad, so if you have a white paddle tail shad, the bigger the tail the better. 3 to 4 inches long, very light weight on it, and that's to allow you to slowly reel it in. No twitching, no jigging, no nothing.
Just a dead return.
Yeah, really, really slow reel. Just enough to keep it in the water and get that tail moving a little bit. Doesn't have to be moving a lot. He said slow and steady was the key. Yeah. And he said the snook just...
I think that's the hardest thing for almost all fishermen is working stuff slow. I think the biggest mistake that everyone makes with no matter what lure it is, I don't care if it's a spook, I don't care even a buzz bait.
I can tell you,
people work stuff way too fast.
Penn's got a cool new line of reels out coming out this year, and it's going to be the best second reel you buy. If you're a pure fisherman, you're going to want to buy one of these. If you're in a boat and you want a second rod to fish with, you're going to buy one. The following year,
if you travel back up north, it's one you want to take back home with you.
Oh yeah, it's great reel coming out this year. And next year, I know what they've got coming out, and the world is going to be staggered. That is going to shock everybody. It's exactly what Penn needed to build. I'm going to talk to them about building a two-speed spinning reel so I can slow down.
Yeah, I was just, well, and that's what I was just going to say. I mean, I think so many people are so fixed on nowadays, number one, drag, how much drag strength does it have?
Yes.
And then number two, gear ratio. You know, ever since these bait casters have come out with these burners that are 7.2 to 1, it's just, you know, your spinning reels nowadays, some of them, you know, average ones, what, 5.5 or 5.7, something like that?
Yeah, close to 6.
You know, so. And there's a handful of them that are even faster. And I think if they could get some of those reels where, like you said, you know, if it could it down to like a 4,
I dropped down
it would be
to,
so
incredible. I put the 1,000 and battle on, or I took a 1,000 conflict or 1,000 battle, I don't remember which one. I think I had the conflict. And I was using that to do my lures with, because the spool is so small, it doesn't retrieve it very fast.
Right.
And it even though it's going around, it doesn't claim the inches. On a 4,000, the spool is much bigger. It's a couple more inches of line every time the rotor goes around, so it brings it back faster.
Right.
Even though it might say they have the exact same retrieve, the larger spool collects more line on a single rotation. So
right.
I went to the smaller reel to slow me down.
Now let me ask you this. If they were to come up with that where you could change the gear ratio, how would that change your cross wrap on the line? Would that maybe mess it up at all?
No, not if they left the... Because what you'd be changing is the amount... How many times the rotor went around the spool.
Okay.
Not how the spool goes in and out.
Okay.
So whether it's going slower or going faster,
I just don't know enough
slower,
about the internal components of those,
be,
of how they act.
Yeah, it would be better cross wrap going slower because you'd have more time to go across. But maybe, I don't even know if that's true. But I do know that I'd like to have a reel that's like 2.5 to 1 and jumps all the way to almost 6 to 1.
Right.
I mean, I would like something in that 1 to 1.5 to 2.5 turns per, you know, revolutions every time I run the handle around, and then be able to hit the switch and go into six, you know, the high 5-6s, so I can get some speed when I have to catch a fish.
Right.
Because when they're running at you, you need that speed.
Absolutely.
But trying to get them hooked up, most of the time, most of the places, if you could switch down to that low gear, that would be ideal.
Absolutely. You know, and it just goes back, I mean, like DOA's one of the most phenomenal lures in the world, but if you don't work it slow, you're not going to catch the fish that other guys
slow and steady.
Very.
Yeah.
You know.
So, no, you're right about that, but boy, I wish, I got to talk to Penn about that and see what it'd take to get one of those, because I don't even know if, I know somebody's built one, but I know it's ungodly expensive.
Yes. It's so serious.
And it's just not worth it.
No.
I put a 1,000 on. It slowed me way down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I didn't need more drag than that. I was fine.
Right.
So I just went to a little tiny spool, and that kind of solved my problem. But, anyway, where were we? Bull Bay, Turtle Bay.
Between
so let's
Devilfish and Cape Hayes.
Let's do Cape Hayes.
Okay. All around Cape Hayes, basically on the flat there, there's been some pompano, a few trout, tons of pinfish and puffer fish. The bonnet heads have started to show up in the last 2 days. That kind of played a disappearing act for the last couple weeks.
I don't know what's up with that. They just all left.
They either knew something we didn't, or like Kale's theory, maybe they went out to that hole to spawn or to breed. But me personally, I'm a little skeptical on that. You know, gestation period on most of your sharks is 6 to 9 months, and April and May is when they give birth. So I'm not 100% convinced that. I may be wrong on the bonnet head part of it, but
if I could spell gestation, I would look it up, but I have no idea how to spell it. So sorry folks, I was going to Google that quick for you, but you know, I have no idea how to spell it. But anyway, what's going on right around
as you work up the west wall there?
Yeah.
There's been some pompano out on the flat, or up on top of the flat, I should say, or the bar. Some trout. There have been quite a few cobia being seen. You know, there's I don't know if it's, I know the Kobe are always here, you know, but they definitely make a much better presence in the spring, and I think they get seen a lot more this time of year because of the water clarity. You know, it's March, you know, February is okay, it's usually a little windy and overcast, so the water is tough to see in, but March and April, your water's so darn clear, and I've been hearing so many good reports of the water clarity, basically, from the middle of the West Wall down, and from Alligator Creek all the way down, the water's been super, super clear. It doesn't start to seem to get a little stirred up until you get into the Peace River, and that's because it never stopped flowing this winter at all. You know, never came to a complete standstill the way it normally does.
No,
I mean,
right,
it's always
right.
Trickling just a tiny, tiny bit, but that's like just a faucet that drips every 15 minutes. Big deal. So that west wall, you're starting to see a few more cobia. Most of them are on the smaller side, but they're still fun to catch. But keep your eye out for the manatees. The cobia have been following them. I've even had Josh was telling me tonight, he had a couple people tell me that he's been seeing some cobia with the cow nose rays, which is weird. That's one time I have never seen cobia is with cow nose rays. I see them all the time with regular rays, but I have never seen cobia swimming with the cow nose rays, whether they're on the flats or whether they're schooled up out in the middle of the harbor. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, but you know, if there's enough thread fins, they won't mix with greenbacks, bait fish wise.
Right.
But when they're short on numbers, then they'll go together.
Right.
When the bait fish don't have enough fish to feel comfortable, the greenbacks, the thread fins, the butterfish, they'll all, even the sugar trout, everything, all congregate up in a ball, just that there's safety in numbers for them.
Right.
And maybe that's the thing. There's so many you know, cow nose rays that I don't think they need to hang out with the other rays.
Right.
I think their population is so high.
Well, and I think with cow nose rays, I think another reason why with cobia, I mean, personally, cobia follow manatees and regular stingrays, especially on the flats, for one primary reason. They're spooking up stuff off the bottom. They're disturbing the bottom, or their shadow is casting over and making a shrimp or a crab or shrimp or anything else puff up out of the sand, and that cobia is taking a shot at every chance he can get because they're kind of opportunistic feeders. They're also scavengers too, so if you've got, you know, you'll see cobia swim all the time with sharks. They're following the shark to help pick up some of the scraps that are left behind, the same as a remora does. I mean, cobia is basically just a big remora in some aspects. Manatees do the same thing. As they swim along, their bodies hit the bottom, spook up all sorts of little critters, and they're there to take a shot at any opportunity they can. Just the same way with, I will always cast into a school of redfish, or school of mullet, because there's always redfish either right with them or following right behind them, because those mullet are always spooking stuff up.
You know, I've been doing a search here, and everybody can tell me they have 4 to 16 young when they give birth. And
what's that?
The bonnet sharks. A litter of sharks, they call it same way as they do a dog, is 4 to 16 pups per shark.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no reference to how long they're pregnant. Anywhere.
Dr. Jose Castro, Sharks of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
He's going to have...
I can honestly tell you, you would think that doing a search on bonnet sharks would be safe, but I thank God for AVG. I mean, I got that virus program. It came up twice.
Really?
Yeah, blocked twice. Something tried to hit into my computer.
I'll look it up tonight because I've got that book. That book is absolutely incredible with the detailed information on it. And it's easy to read. It's not, you don't have to be totally science geek to understand it, which is what I like.
Because I looked on Wikipedia, then I went to FWC, then there was another one that says info about bonnet sharks, and immediately the antivirus program kicked in.
Nice.
And
then, is that what that beep was?
Yeah, and then another one kicked on, and you know, boom, the antivirus kicked in. I said, no.
I'm done.
I'm not looking anymore. I need this computer.
Starting to see some snook, too, over there on the west wall a little bit. Those are all right up against the bushes. Redfish are scattered, but the majority of those redfish are starting to pop up right at the mouths of the creeks. Some of those big creeks that you see over, like the blowdown.
Gravel Creek, Blowdown, Oyster Creek.
Yeah, yep. All those, you're starting to see a few more redfish. Sizes are starting to pick up. And look for moving water underneath those bushes, because there's actually quite a few little creeks over on that whole west wall that people just don't see that are overgrown with some of the mangroves, that the water pumps out of there a little faster than other spots. So, you know, just like you were saying about the islands and stuff, and Lewis and Clark, be observant. Watch that water and see if you see some either color change or actual flow.
Right.
You know, there's usually a reason for one or the other, so check it out and try to concentrate those spots heavy.
Getting up in the Myakka up around Algebeen, I haven't been around. I took yesterday off. I stayed home yesterday.
Algebeen's been a little bit slow. Tony was out there the other night, and he got into a couple snook. They weren't real consistent at all. He's been hearing of a few sheep.
Now, Tony's using that brown storm swim bait, isn't he?
Yeah.
That gold or brown one?
Yeah. He switches back and forth to a couple different ones, but that, I think it's that golden mullet is his favorite, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
That's the one that it is.
Four-inch storm.
Four-inch, five-inch.
Swim shad, yeah.
Yeah. But he said the sheep's head bite was pretty good a few days ago, but he hadn't seen anything in the last couple days. The trout have been very sporadic there. Working your way over towards the Tippy Canoe, the trout seem to pick up just a little bit more with a few oddball pompano and some sheep's head right there at the mouth of the north end of the Myakka cutoff. You know, even up inside the Myakka cutoff here, and of a few sheep's head being caught as incidental catch while the guys are throwing the shrimp under the bushes looking for the redfish.
So, Myakka cutoff. There's trout, there is all kinds of fish there at both ends of that cutoff and up inside with the redfish, and I know there's monster snook up in there, but
right.
Anyway, the artificial reef, concrete reef out in Alligator Creek?
Alligator Creek reef's been okay. A lot of sheep's head on it, a lot of mangrove snappers starting to pick back, well, not a lot, but they're just starting to pick back up, and I think from this day forward, you're going to see a lot more, because usually end of March is usually a phenomenal month for nice mangrove snapper.
You get big mangroves, you get and even some grouper and stuff start to show back up there.
Been a few cobia on it, a couple bonnet heads, kind of a little bit of a mixed bag, but there it's been just like we've been talking about for a while, move a lot, drop your anchor, fish for a half hour to 45 minutes, nothing starts to happen after you put your chum in the water and playing around a little bit. Even if you just pull anchor and drift another 50 yards and drop the anchor again and
even
fish.
100 feet.
Yeah.
I mean, the reef's a mile long. You can go every, 50, 100 feet and drop your anchor again and get in a whole different world of fishing.
Absolutely.
You know, it's all about move and adapt.
And sometimes it is kind of funny there that it's so, you were talking about fish being segregated.
Right.
It is kind of funny there because there's certain spots where it holds a lot of mangroves in this spot, and then you move down just a little bit and it's nothing but sheep's head. Then the next spot is nothing but undersized gag grouper or small jewfish. It's pretty weird how certain times you fish there, it's isolated pockets of fish.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time it's a variety, but every now and then you go there and it's just like, you're just catching one after the other, this fish, then you go, okay, well, they stop by and you move over to the other spot and it's a totally different species.
One thing we did forget, Capes Reef.
Capes Reef has been spotty. I haven't heard really anything.
It was
exciting.
Worth forgetting. I got it. Okay.
We did forget it, but honestly, I haven't heard anything consistent off of it.
No, that's a good reason for forgetting it. Anything through the holes in the harbor?
Been some spotty silver trout. That's another thing that I forgot. That between the 41 bridge and up to right there at Harbor Heights, some guys have been catching some decent numbers of silver trout. But from marker one out to basically Pirate Harbor hole, spotty silver trout, some sugar trout, and that's about it.
Okay. Well, I don't think we forgot anything. I think we covered the area pretty good.
Think so.
Anything else you want to add?
Honestly, just it's starting to get into that really darn exciting time of the year. It's time to start bringing a variety of fishing poles with you of all sizes, because you never know what you're going to start to run into.
That's one of the hardest things about guys. We had a guy in the other day, he wanted a pole that would catch trout and redfish and grouper and everything, one rod. And I'm like, yeah, you can do it, but you're having no fun at all on the smaller fish, and it's not going to handle the big fish. It's like when somebody comes down and they want to buy that boat that's small enough for the harbor but big enough for the Gulf. It means it's too small for the Gulf and too big for the harbor.
Exactly.
It doesn't work. You got to carry a couple rods with you.
Yeah.
And I've been out, I had a 5.5 foot ultralight, basically what you would consider a crappie rod, and then I had a 6 to 12 pound spinning rod. Mm-hmm. I was actually using my smoke setup, a lighter smoke. I don't know if it was a 6 to 12, but it's like that action. It's a very...
Yeah, it's a pretty light action.
Medium light action. And then I had my ultralight. And those were the rods I took the last time I went fishing. And it's been more than adequate to handle the fish I had. Now, Dad had that 23, 24 inch redfish. I would have had a harder time turning him away from the trees. He was using a regular 8 to 17. But when he caught his trout, it was... very little fun.
Yeah,
there was
the water
really
came right to the boat.
Yeah, it's just okay. Yeah, I think I got a fish, you know. Yeah. And but he likes that. He's not comfortable with the lighter rods, you know. I enjoy that. I like, you know, I don't mind losing a fish every once in a while.
He was bragging about the trip. Well, not bragging about it, but he was talking about the trip yesterday to a guy, saying he had a good time out there. He said the fishing was kind of eh, but he said he had a real good time.
Well, Dan and I think, and maybe where I got it from, is finding the spot so when we go back the next time, it's going to get even better.
Right.
And every time we go out, we get a little better at it.
Well, and it's so self-gratifying, too. When you find that spot, kind of dial it in a little bit, and then you come back and realize that, hey, my observation did work because now I'm actually catching a couple fish out of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, no. I like seeing the whole thing come full circle.
Yeah. There you go. That's perfect.
I want to go up to Lemon Bay. I want to put in in Indian Mounds and come back and fish the bridge and that inside of where that anchorage is up there in some of those docks, because mm-hmm. historically that's where some of the biggest sheephead have ever come from.
Right.
But I got a
Danny
hunch.
Danny said he got one that was over, what was it, 20?
Yeah.
24 inches or something like
yeah,
that?
Huge 23 inches? Sheephead. We've had customers bringing in. This is the year for the biggest sheephead I've ever seen on a consistent level.
Yeah.
Not any big numbers where you go out and catch 200 sheephead during the day, but just, oh my gosh, some big sheephead.
Fish.
Most consistent big sheephead I think I ever remember.
Absolutely.
Yeah, weird year. I mean, and I'm not sure where this year's going to go. But I'm looking forward to the next few months, because historically the next March, April, May, and June are the most unique fishing experience you can have, because you're reeling in a ladyfish and all of a sudden you have 150-pound tarpon on it.
Yep.
I mean, here you are and you're having fun catching trout or snapper, and all of a sudden, instead of that 1 to 3 pound fish you had, something 100 pounds has just eaten it, and now you're hooked up to that.
I love that. It scares the bejesus out of you, but then you're just back into excitement.
Oh yeah,
in a heartbeat, literally. You get just
okay,
stone cold scared.
This is great. Oh, gee, holy, what the? Oh yeah, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
It's a cool little mix of emotions all in.
And
couple seconds.
The next 4 months are when 90% of that happens. I mean,
absolutely.
You can have it happen anytime in Florida. I mean, anytime you come down, you're sitting there and you're fishing for this, and all of a sudden you have this monster on. But in the next 4 months, it's incredibly, it happens a lot. Every day we hear the stories. So, you know, your chances just go up exponentially. And the weather's still bad up there. They're expecting another front. I'm watching the Weather Channel this morning, and what's going on up there is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, they got 6 inches of snow in West Virginia,
or the Carolinas,
they got snow, and just north of Atlanta, there's a couple inches of snow. I mean, and it goes all the way back over to Texas. And then they got another winter storm coming in. So Boston, sorry guys, it ain't over.
No.
It's not over. You know, it's only February.
Yeah. It's almost over.
Yeah.
17 days for chaos.
17 days for chaos?
17 days until chaos.
Okay, explain that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the tent sale. Oh, my God. Yeah. This is the first one that's trying to kill me.
Yes.
Yeah, this is the first one that's trying to kill me. I have never... This
is going to be a serious fire drill the last week.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to have 20 or 30 people working that day.
We're fortunate to have phenomenal customers that want to volunteer to help for that day.
We've got people volunteering to help us out. I mean, I think if you include all the factory people, which there's, I think this year we're going to have, 15, 20.
I don't know how many guys. 20 some different.
Yeah, 20 some different factory people. And we're going to have almost 50 people working that day.
Yeah.
There's almost 50 people working for that one day. And I don't think we're going to near enough.
Uh-uh. And I don't think so either.
It's just a tremendous amount of fun. Come with a friend and come to spend some time. This is not that. Okay, I'm just looking. This is where you come to interact with the factory, meet the people who make the stuff you fish with, talk to them. Even if it takes you a few minutes to get up, you know, if you're going to spend 10 minutes in line, every single one of them has a casting tank. You get to watch them do the lures. By the time you get up there, you've got great stuff in your head already. And then to actually get there and talk to the guy and say, okay, I'm fishing trout over here, you know, what should I be using? And
well, and the coolest part too, even while you're waiting in line, everyone's here that loves to fish. I mean, when all these guys were standing out here waiting in line to ask questions or whatever, they're chatting it up amongst themselves, telling fishing stories, telling them what they loved about this rod or this reel, and that's why they're here to buy another one. I mean,
Fishing France is famous throughout the industry for one thing more than anything else. The greatest clientele, the nicest people on the planet coming into the store. I mean, it's legendary. I mean, legend, wait for it, dairy. I mean, it's
nice.
It really is.
That wasn't a long enough pause there.
Yeah, I know, but you know. And they're just so cool to be around. And it's mobbed, it's chaotic. There's people everywhere, and I've never had a better bunch. And I'm not big on crowds. I'm horrible in crowds. And I got to tell you, that day, it's nothing but fun.
Yeah.
Everybody's having such a good time, and they're all yakking and talking to each other, and it's the one place that you can go and just chat with the other people. I think that's the most spectacular thing about it. What you learn from the guy you're standing in line with is spectacular, and then get up and talk to the factory and... thank you guys for making this thing a really, really big success. And, it's time to go, boys and girls.
Yes.
We're all done.
We're good.
We're good. So, anyway, let's do this official. Look at the producer of this show is actually getting better. He's putting music on at the end. Yeah, this is Fish and Frank in the chair here, and Robert in the chair across from me, and this has been another Radio Fishing with Robert and Fish and Frank. Yeah, one of these days we're going to do this professionally, you know, actually pretend like we know what we're doing.
We do know what we're doing. We're having a good time doing it.
Yeah, I know. So, anyway, guys, really appreciate everything. Frank and Robert saying thank you, and we'll see you at the store and at the tent sale. Bye-bye.